It's a real privilege that I have to be able to walk him up here, and I'm inviting him to speak to you guys. So could you guys give him a round of applause as I welcome him up here?
Guys, thanks. Thanks for having me here. It's cool to finally be here with you guys and just see what you do here. And it's a neat, kind of very diverse group. I feel like an old man, though. I'm 34. Feels old. Trust me. You'll see some pictures here that prove that. This is actually my third time doing this, sharing my story like this, and it is a bit difficult to summarize your life story in 30, 40 minutes, what we have here. So, but mostly I'm just going to share some experiences that I feel have shaped my journey. It might be a little disjointed, a little random, but these are things that stuck out in my journey that I feel led me to where I am today. So my wife Wendy's here. That's the whole crew. There's Wendy. Wendy, raise your hand. I would have liked to bring all the kids, but fortunate for you guys, they're extremely loud and kind of crazy. But I have four kids. Liam's the oldest, Jack, Silas, and Judah. So God's blessed me with boys. We've tried to have girls, and it just isn't happening. So, but I work here in town at a place called Uvada. It's a copper wire mill. I go to church down in Oshkosh at Water City Church. It's a church plant that we started with my brother-in-law and my sister in 2007. So still a really cool thing to be a part of. It's really developed over the last 7 years now. So, but growing up, this is our crew growing up here. So we did a little vintage photograph for you there. But this is my family growing up. You can see I went from rocking a sweet mullet to almost no hair at all. So 20 years, that's what happens. But anyway, but growing up, I can't say enough about my family and my parents. Strong believers, a really awesome family to grow up in, a tight group. I just remember being loved as a kid, learning about God from before I can remember, and praying and asking Jesus into my heart several times just to make sure I got it right and got the words right, and thinking about heaven. And you know, I grew up, that was part of growing up for me. And it was a great family to grow up in. Didn't have a lot of money, small house, and we were close, physically close. I mean, we had one bathroom, but I mean, it was a neat family to grow up in. We're still all very close now. I went to a church in Menasha at a church called Evangel. It was a non-denominational church, maybe 100, 150 people or so. But again, I can't say enough about the church. It was a great experience. You know, Royal Rangers, Sunday school, a lot of families there, a lot of leaders that taught me about God, and it was a great experience for me growing up, and trying to figure out what made me walk away, if it was a conscious thing or what. I tried to come up with a few things that maybe contributed to that, where I got to where I was. But I mean, one thing I know for certain, probably right around that age in that picture, I'm 11, so I'm going into middle school. I was at a small grade school, Trinity, with 10 classmates. I was headed to a public school with 250 or 300 classmates. And to me, at around that time, you know, teenage years, whatever, all I cared about was being accepted, being cool, being popular. That was it to me. And I would do whatever it took so kids would accept me. And I don't know why that's still something I battle today. Call it the fear of man, call it people-pleasing, whatever you want to call it. But it's something I struggle with today, and I really, really struggled with it back then. So that was just number one for me. And the other thing I think about is the church that I went to at that time, sometime in the 90s, you know, there was a shift. And it went from a conservative, I would say kind of traditional church, to a charismatic, very expressive church. That means, you know, worship became very, very expressive. People dancing and yelling and waving banners and people getting prayed for and falling down and speaking in tongues, if you've ever seen that. But I'm not saying that's bad. I'm not, you know, judging that. I'm saying, as a teenager who's very concerned with being cool, that was absolutely terrifying for me. It was like, this is not what I want at all. And I compartmentalized God. It was like, when I thought of God, I thought of church. So, you know, that was a Sunday thing. And all of a sudden, church is very weird and very, like, I don't want nothing to do with that. And so I think that kind of influenced me stepping back and saying, I don't need this, I don't want this. Then I'm scared my friends are going to come in and see this stuff, and it's like, oh man, this is nuts. So I had an experience back then that I remember. We would have, you know, there was a standard Sunday service. You'd have your certain accepted level of crazy that would happen there. But, I mean, if we had a missionary or a guest speaker or something like that come in, it was all holds off. You know, it could be really intense. And it was one of those services. I think it was like a Sunday night thing. And at the end, they're praying for people, and they're falling all over the place. There's, like, bodies everywhere on the ground. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to try that. I don't know why. Maybe it was my friend went up. I don't really remember why. But I went up there, and I'm like, well, I'm going to see what this is all about. And from what I understood, you get prayed for, and you fall down. So I go up there, they pray for me, and I just tip backwards and fall down. And someone caught me, but I'm laying there, and nothing. I feel nothing at all. And I start to feel stupid and kind of embarrassed. My brothers still make fun of me. They were laughing at me when I was doing that, but... But to me, it's like all these people are faking it or something. This is dumb. Like, what are they doing? Is this like one of those, you know, hypnosis things where everyone kind of just does it because everyone else is doing it or what? But I think it kind of stuck with me. And by then, you know, by my teenage years, I'm talking 15 or 16 years old, I had a job, so I was working every Sunday anyway. But I really separated myself from church very much so. But even from my family, I did not spend a lot of time with them. Like, with my brothers, I don't remember spending a ton of time with them at that age. It was either I was working, I was at school, or I was with my friends, and my friends were just number one to me. It was like, this is the most important thing to me, is being with my friends and being accepted, being cool. And the guys that we're hanging out with were, we were into, you know, stealing and vandalism, and we idolized gangster rap. That was the coolest thing you could. You had only CDs that had the parental advisory label were acceptable, and that was cool and stuff. So, but soon enough, we discovered alcohol, started experimenting, and, it started what I would say innocent, I guess, but, you know, we'd be at a friend's house, and their parents always had some liquor, and drink one or so. Well, that was fun, and, you know, it's just kind of stupid, but, I mean, soon enough, we incorporated into everything, and you know, if you couldn't go to a basketball game, you had to go drunk. You couldn't go to a school dance, you had to be drunk. I mean, we'd skip out of a class of school, run to my friend's house, pound some beers, go back to school. Stupid stuff. But it, for me, I think it became like an identity thing. It was almost like a reputation that I got. I always got decent grades, but I wasn't really good at sports. I wasn't, you know, really popular or anything, but I could drink, and I was like one of the guys that would party, so that became my identity, and people, I thought it was cool, and this was my ticket to, you know, I wanted to be accepted all this time, and I finally got this way to alcohol. It's given me the key to what I want, and I thought it was great, so I just really embraced it, and this was every weekend. We'd be, you know, planning it. How are we going to get out? I worked at a grocery store. We'd usually, you know, steal it, and where are we going to drink it? And it was everything, and that was what we did for probably the last 2 years of high school. So one of the good things that happened to me in high school is I met my wife, Wendy. That's a couple of young kids right there, like a homecoming dance or something. But we had a class together. It's the only class we ever had together. We just happened to sit by each other, became friends, and started dating after that. It was like 17 years ago. But I was very blessed that God did that for me. So Wendy was always something good in my life that I could always count on. And she's actually similar to me. Parents were believers, hung out with similar people, similar crowds. She had a little better head on her shoulders. I think she didn't, you know, she'd go to parties and stuff, but usually she'd kind of maintain her composure and stuff. But I was very, very blessed to meet Wendy, and she kind of went on this journey with me that was interesting, to say the least. So really, not a lot of consequences, though, in high school. Mostly, it was, I thought it was fun, you know, the whole drinking. It was carefree, and I just thought it was pretty normal. And the only really thing that I remember of consequence that happened was my senior year. It was the night before the last day of school, and I was out getting drunk for some reason. I don't know why. But I pulled over, I got a DWI, I got put in jail. Had to call my dad to get me out of jail, and he was not thrilled with me, but it didn't faze me at all. I was almost defiant, like, you know, whatever. I'm going off to school. I got accepted at Madison, and they took my license, and I was off to school and didn't look back. When I got to college, it was kind of a continuation of high school, only now you go from sneaking around in basements and parents' houses to everyone's got their own house, tons of freedom, tons of kids that want to do just what you want to do, and if you as much as you want to drink and party, you can do it. I mean, every night if you want, and I just embraced that wholeheartedly. I went kind of nuts, and I want to emphasize this. Drinking can be fun. I'm not denying that. There's a reason so many people do it. So many people are addicted to it. It can be fun. It can make things, you know, awesome and whatever, but there's a big price to pay, and as I went on, as I kept living like this, things happened, consequences, and it just started to build on itself. I think it started probably more my sophomore year. I mean, freshman year, I got in plenty of legal trouble. I had always getting underage tickets. There was one time I'd gotten a ticket for drinking. It was either that or fake ID or something, but I had to go to court to stand before the judge. For some reason, I had to go. So I got so drunk the night before, by the time I got to court the next day, it was still in my system enough that they could smell it, and I had to take a breathalyzer in front of the judge, and I was still drunk, and he's like, what are you doing, man? Like, you're here because you're drinking, and you showed up drunk. Like, he just couldn't believe it, and I'm like, I don't know, I'm stupid. But I mean, stuff like that, I mean, just, I have no concept of responsibility at that time with that. I had to sign a waiver with our dorm that, you know, if you get in any more trouble with the police, because I had so many issues, that you're evicted. So like the last couple months of freshman year, I was on pins and needles, like I could get evicted at any second. Thankfully, I made it, but it was still fun to me that time, and I think it started to switch and turn a bit for me sophomore year. Sort of had a dark feel to it. The legal issues we talked about, there was academic problems. I was not going to class very much, sleeping a lot, skipping a lot of class. My grades were slipping quite a bit. I want to talk about the hangovers themselves. I don't know if any of you have ever experienced hangover, but it's not pleasant. But when you first start drinking, especially when you're younger, it's not terrible. It's like, okay, I feel kind of tired or headache or whatever. But as you get older and as you do it more and as you go on these like 3-day, 4-day binges where you drink every day, all day, when you finally stop and you have to deal with that hangover, it starts to get really not just physically uncomfortable. I mean, there's obviously that, you know, headache and sick and whatever, but I mean, emotionally and mentally, it starts to be really dark and depressing. And like, I remember nights, I mean, and I can't sleep and I'm just laying there and it's a very dark place you're in, like just feeling like I didn't even feel human. Like I felt like almost like a robot or something. And we're starting to, you know, get into drugs, and I mean not just pot, but I mean heavier drugs, and experiencing, I guess what they call bad trips, where you know take stuff and you start to feel, and it can be almost scary. Like you start to feel like you can't stop it, you can't turn it off, and it can be really frightening. But I think we felt like we had to push the envelope. It wasn't enough to just sit around and have some beers and, you know, whatever. We had to push it and take it to the next level and try to maybe recapture that feeling of what it was like to start drinking, you know, right when we started. So I think we were chasing that feeling, that hole in your heart, and trying to fill it with whatever there was. But I didn't know what else to do. This was, you know, what else do we do? You know, this is what we do. So all my friends were doing it, and there was just a lot of consequences, and started to become even physical. Like I have this, you can still see, but I got a scar on my hand like this, just from one night I was upset about something and just raging. We used to break stuff. Wendy remembers this. We had a balcony in one of our houses. It's like three stories up, and I mean, we just throw stuff off there. It's like, it's just stupid. We collect stuff from the neighborhood and trash it, and that was how we had fun, I guess. So I'm out there just wrecking something. I was mad or something, and took a piece of wood and chucked it, and it somehow came around and just ripped my hand open, like, oh my gosh, and it's like bleeding everywhere, and I went to the hospital and got sewed up, and they're like, you're very fortunate, you know, you missed a lot of critical. I'm like, yeah, whatever. And just nothing seemed to stop me or faze me, and it just seemed to get worse. And poor Wendy's, she's back at home, and she's going to school back home, so she'd come up and visit me, and I was a jerk to her a lot. I mean, she'd come up and visit me, and I just want to drink and get drunk, and I remember, you know, kicking her out of my house sometimes, and I'd leave messages for her on her answer machine that are just verbally abusive. I don't even know why. She'd play them for me. She's like, do you want to hear what you said last night? I'm like, not really, but I mean, she plays stuff for me where I'm just calling her every name in the book, and I don't know why. I mean, I don't know why she stayed with me, but it was really pretty nasty, some of the stuff, some of the ways I treated her. But drinking definitely started to, as we approached the legal age of drinking, it just kind of started to get old, but I didn't know what else to do. Finally had an experience that I think did make me think and kind of evaluate myself. I'm going to flip it. This is a fence, as you can see. I took a picture of this a couple years after this incident, and we're actually in Madison last weekend, and it's no longer there. It's on State Streets across from a bar. I was drinking, as a lot of my stories start, I was drunk, I was drinking, whatever. And it was, you know, one of those, I think it was a Saturday, so, you know, you drink Thursday, Friday, and a lot of times by Saturday you feel so bad that you just start drinking early and drink all day and kind of lose control of yourself. I'm sure there were drugs involved too. And we're at a bar with some friends, and one of my buddies wanted to go. I'm like, all right, let's go, and followed him. He climbed the fence. I tried to follow him, and I got caught on the fence, and I'm like hanging from my belt. So I'm just like hanging there like, ah. And I have to piece this together from what he told me. I don't really remember a lot of this, but he said two guys, and I know I got in a fight. I know I got beat up that night for some reason. So I don't know if these were the guys that did it or what, but two guys, he said, tried to get me off the fence. And somehow, like, all my weight came down on one of those spikes and completely impaled myself, like, right through the top of my leg. I don't remember it from the pain, because, I mean, you think if it really, really hurt, I'd, like, no matter how drunk I was, I'd be like, oh my gosh, that hurts. I don't really remember it. The next thing I know, I got home somehow, and he said he ended up chasing these guys somewhere. So I don't know. I don't really know. But anyway, next thing I know, I'm waking up. So this happened 1 or 2 in the morning. Woke up in my bed, and it's the usual routine. Where am I? You know, where's my wallet? Okay. I was trying to figure out what happened. And, like, my legs, like, kind of, like, whole thigh feels kind of numb and hurts. And I'm, like, reached down. There's, like, blood. Like, oh, my gosh. Like, so I started looking, and, like, there's a lot of blood. Like, pants are soaked. A lot of blood in the bed, and I'm like, what the heck? You know, I don't know what happened. I'm trying to figure it out. Like, gotta clean up. I go in the shower, look in the mirror. I got, like, a black eye, and face is swollen. I'm like, oh, man, this is bad. But I'm, like, kind of embarrassed, you know? It's like, I can't even see it. It's right, you know, by my butt. I'm like, oh, this is kind of embarrassing. And so I'm, like, trying to play it off with my friends, and, like, oh, remember last time? Like, yeah, that was crazy. I don't know what happened. And just kind of trying to hide it, but so I'm trying to go through the day, and it's starting to hurt, and it's not getting better. It won't stop bleeding. I'm like, this is not good. Like, I got to do something. So I go to the hospital. I just walked there myself, and went to the ER and said, hey, you got to check this out, and something's wrong here. I've been bleeding for like 24 hours or whatever. Checked me out. They said, you got to have surgery like now. Like, okay, I don't really know why, but that's good. Let's just get this over with. They had to call my dad. He was the insurance carrier. I didn't even want to talk to him. So embarrassed, and just like, but not a lot of relationship there, so he must have gave him the okay. Called Wendy quick, said, hey, I hurt myself. Gonna have surgery. I'll be all right. And she's, you know, crying and stuff. But anyway, you know, they put me out. Woke up the next day, I think, the doctor came in. She said, you had a very significant injury. She said, you have a wound big enough that I can fit my whole hand inside it. Because there's so long between from when you got hurt to when we, you know, she said, I tried to clean it up as good as I could, you know, saline and sew it up, multiple layers of stitches. And said, because it's been a decent amount of time, said, there's a good risk for infection. You got to stay here for at least a few days on IV antibiotics, and we got to monitor this. And I said, well, what happens if there's an infection? She says, well, the wound goes up basically to the base of your groin penis area, and says it's pretty serious. If it's infected, I won't go into details. I don't freak you guys out, but let's just say I wouldn't be having kids at least. So I just like looking at her like, oh my gosh, like she's speaking a different language. It's like, this isn't happening. This is like a nightmare. Part of the healing process, what she wanted me to do while I was in the hospital, is every couple hours I'm supposed to like sit in this, like a warm bath called a sitz bath, just to help with the healing process. This nurse had to help me and stuff. It's very embarrassing, but that was the low point of my life. Just sitting there all by myself in the hospital, and just like, how did it come to this? Like, this is not how life is supposed to be. This is, I can't go on like this. I don't know if I reached out to God. I can't remember, but I know I just had that kind of moment that it's like, this has to stop. You can't go on living like this. So that summer, I went home. I couldn't wait to get out of Madison. I started to try to kind of cling to things and grasp for things that I thought were good. I ended up getting out of the hospital. Obviously, you know, I didn't have an infection by the grace of God again. And I had to do many follow-up visits, you know, restitching some things, removing all kinds of follow-up work. I don't know how many visits. But the doctor just kept saying, you are very, very fortunate of where exactly that wound was and how it went. I mean, she says, 1 inch here or there, and A, you're either not having kids, or B, like, you're going to have a bag tied to your stomach for the rest of your life where your waste will come out of. I mean, that would not be fun either. So she just said, unbelievable how fortunate you are. And I still thank God that, you know, as bad as it was, I mean, he had serious grace for me in that situation. But and I felt stupid, too. It's not like, you know, I'm not like a soldier fighting a war with an injury. It's like I'm a drunk idiot who got beat up by a fence. You know, it's like, this is a joke. You know, it's ridiculous that I'm doing this to myself. So this is just kind of a collection of pictures I tried to find, that just looking for things in my life that I knew I categorized as good. You know, in Madison and drinking and friends, I started to view as kind of like, this is not good for me. And I still stupidly, continued to drink. But I tried to look for things like, obviously Wendy, you know, we spent a lot of time together after that. I know I decided around that time we were going to get married, and I knew I wanted to spend the rest of my life with her, and we spent a lot of time together around that time. My parents finally, you know, they came and visited me at school, and I started to repair that relationship a bit. Fishing, I took up fishing. I kind of became more of a loner. You know, I'm still kind of that way today, but that was definitely a time where I just kind of went way introverted after that incident and just tried to protect myself, I think. That's actually Bubba in that top middle picture right there. I knew he looked up to me a lot, and he was my youngest brother, and I had a lot of guilt for not spending time with him, and so I just come up with like projects and stuff that we could do together. You probably remember, you know, like we'd build model airplanes, and I think we're building a box or something here. Just stupid stuff. But I just wanted to spend time with him. I love spending time with Bubba. He was such an innocent, just a good. He just represented good to me, and made me help my soul to hang out with him. The little guy there is actually my nephew. He's the first. Is Wendy's sister had a baby around that time. Caden is like 14 years old now. It's scary. I used to hang out. We would babysit him when they'd go out on a date or something. It was awesome. Like I just love the kind of feeling of a little kid like that, such an innocent kid, and him learning my name and just experiencing that. And I really just those things really resonated with me, and started reading for the first time like ever. I mean, I never read much at all, unless I had to for school, and the Lord of the Rings movie had just come out, Fellowship of the Ring, and I saw that, and it really, for some reason, it just struck a chord with me, like Frodo and his battling good and evil, and his inner struggle, and I don't know. You know, it just something that some about that. And I read, started reading the book, and it was just like, man, this is cool. And it was always kind of like my thing to do by myself. And I think I was searching for truth. And I didn't know, you know, what path I was on. I didn't necessarily, you know, I need to find God or anything like that. But I was searching for good, for truth. And these were things in my life that represented that. When I went back to school for my senior year, it had a different feel to it. I isolated myself from my friends a bit. Still hung out with them, still drank, got drunk sometimes, but there were definitely times where I would be drinking with them and they'd want to go out and I just want to sit in the house by myself. I got drunk by myself sometimes, as sad as that sounds. Definitely more isolated and just trying to almost protect myself. I almost had a fear like, man, if I go out, something bad's going to happen. I got to just get through this year without killing myself here. But I finished reading The Lord of the Rings, and I really like reading. And I was like, I got to read something next. And I know I had this Bible. When I went off to school, my parents, it was right before I left, they gave me a Bible. And I think at the time I was like, wow, that's awesome. Thank you for that. Well, my friends are getting a car or, you know, full ride, and it's like, oh, Bible, great. I mean, it saved my life, honestly. It's unbelievable. I'd always kept in my dresser drawer, like under my socks, hidden and stuff, and I'd move it from house to house where I was living. Always knew it was there. It's just sitting there, and it couldn't get out of my head. It's like, all right, well, I want something about good and evil. I want something deep. This is about as deep as it gets. It's the Bible, so I didn't know what to expect. I started reading it, and it was just took me by such surprise. Like, I remember reading Proverbs, and it was so practical, just talking about drinking and wisdom and sex and all this stuff that I could apply to real life. And I wasn't expecting that. It's like, and then I read the New Testament, and I read about Jesus, and all of a sudden it's like he's this real guy who, I mean, incredibly wise and powerful and healing people. And when he got crucified, and it's just not the Jesus I remembered from being a kid. You know, this, he was the real deal. It's like, I got to find out more about this guy. And he claimed to be God. So what do I do with that? And read the whole New Testament. And I'm like hiding doing this. I'm doing this in my room, like, you know, don't want anyone to see. Not telling my friend. I didn't tell anybody I was reading the Bible. I maybe told Wendy. And she was probably like, what? Okay. Read the whole thing. And I remember reading verses in the New Testament that would just make my heart pound. I'm like, what? This is nuts. Like, and I knew deep down it was the truth. And I think it was because it was like, I know the truth now. And I knew that. I was like, you don't have excuses now. It's, you know the truth, and you got to do something about this. But I don't know what to do. I had that fear of man thing, and it's like, I know, you know, what are my friends going to think? I don't want to be one of those creepy religious guys like you see on TV. What do I do with this? March 1st, 2003, so I'm 22 years old. I was at home. When I would go home, I would sleep in Wendy's parents' basement on the couch. And she would sleep in her room. So I think I'd gotten drunk the night before, shocker. And I was hungover. Around that time, if I was hungover especially, I could not sleep. I had major sleep issues. So, I mean, I'm laying there, laying on her couch, and I can't sleep. She comes down. She's a nurse. She's got to work at 3 in the morning, comes down. She's like, oh, you're still awake? I'm like, yeah, I can't sleep. I gotta do something, clear my head. I got to go for a drive or something. Something I used to do back then, I'd drive around in my old car, listen to music, smoke cigarettes, whatever, something I used to do to relax. So I'm like, all right, I'm just going to go for a drive. And she's like, okay, you know, drops me off and pop in a mix CD, get in my car, and just start driving. There's a warning for you guys. It's a little weird, okay? I don't blame you if you don't believe me on what happened here. I'm a skeptic. I'm cynical. Someone tells me something like this, my first reaction is like, you're making that up just to get attention or whatever. So, but I don't say that out loud to them. That's mean, but I'm very skeptical of that stuff. Okay. So it's like, you don't have to believe me. I'm here to just tell you this is what happened to me. And I know I have to answer for every word that comes out of my mouth someday. And I'm okay with that. Just, this is what happened. So there it is. Disclaimer. Driving in my car, And I'm like going to this picture's the fishing spot I used to go to that summer. So I'm like, I'm just going to go to this spot and sit there and smoke cigarettes and think about life. What am I doing? Where am I going? Driving, almost there. I know where I'm going. Hands on the wheel, and like my hands, like I just remember my hands started to feel kind of numb. Like, it's, you know, like they're asleep, nothing major. Just looking at them, like trying to warm. It's like, not that cold. It's like, this is weird. Driving along, and like this, whatever is tingling, whatever you call it, just starts to spread. I start to feel it in my neck, like my head, my chest. And it's getting more intense, and there was absolutely a definite moment where I said, I knew it was God. I knew it was something outside of me. It wasn't, you're not cold, you're not numb, you're not whatever. It's not like some sort of seizure. It wasn't drugs. It's like, you've never experienced something like this. And I felt like God had like this dial, and he's like, turn it up a little bit, and I can just feel it. Like physically feel it. And it gets to the point, and I said out loud, I remember two times I said, it's God. It's God. And I'm still driving. And like, as soon as I acknowledged it and I knew it was him, it's like he just, and like, the only way I can describe it is like electricity. Just my whole body, physical. My hands were like this, and I was scared out of my mind. It didn't hurt. I want to be clear about that. It wasn't like painful. It wasn't like God like shocking me or something, but his Holy Spirit was on me like something I've never felt before. And I'm still driving. I'm like scared out of my mind. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, so I get to where I'm going, shut off the car, shut off the music, because the music was like freaking me out too. The song that I was playing was really loud, and like, I was like, I don't know. I never felt anything like that. And I don't know. I know it's God, and it's such an intense feeling. I don't know. Like, I know my body can't take much more. It's that bad. It's like, I don't know. Is he going to kill me? Did I drink too many times here? Is one too many here? Am I dead? And I'm scared, and like, I'm like hyperventilating, just breathing fast, and don't know what to do. And I remember saying out loud, call your dad, call your dad. So I had a cell phone. They were like, you know, Zach Morris phones, big ones back then. Got on my cell phone. My hands are like this, and I get dialed. And I feel bad for my dad to this day. That has to be the weirdest call he's ever gotten in his life. The poor guy's got to work 5 in the morning. This is like 2 or 3 in the morning. I come up, I'm like, Dad, I don't know what's going on. I'm by the lake. God's freaking out there. I don't know. Like, he's like, what? I'm like, I don't know. You got to get down here. And he figured out where I was. Like, okay, son, I'm coming. So, and hang up, and it's just I feel like it's just me and God. I just broke down hardcore, crying, sobbing. And I just became very aware of my sin. And it's like, why is God reaching out to me? I'm the last person that deserves anything like this. Why is he doing this? And I just became so, this feeling of unworthiness. It's like I could see every sin I ever did and just like, God, I'm not worthy of you at all. Just the verse that I read when I read the whole Bible eventually, and I remember reading this in Isaiah, and it really helped describe kind of how I felt. It's in Isaiah 6, verse 5. Woe to me, I cried. I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips. I live among a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty. The King James Version says, I am undone. And I felt like I was undone just before him, just everything there. Just I said, God, I know I can't do life without you. I believe in you, and I want to follow you. Jesus, come into my heart. And it went from a feeling of just guilt and condemnation to just like the slate swiped clean, like you get to start over. You know, it's all, you're forgiven. And it's an amazing feeling. The whole physical sensation kind of started to fade, and you know, I was sitting there, and I mean, I felt peace just kind of sitting there. And my dad showed up, I don't know, half hour later or so, pulls up. I'm standing outside my car now, and he's like, he pulls up, and his headlights are on me. It's still nighttime, and he's not getting out of the car. He's like, I can tell he's like, what, does he got a gun or a knife or what's wrong? What kind of drugs did he take tonight? I don't know. Finally gets out of the car and I walk up to him and hugged him and I'm like, Dad, I don't know what just happened in that car, but I gave my life to Jesus. And he's like, what? He could not. This is the last thing he was expecting. We talked in the car, in his van. There was a really cool moment between me and my dad. I think we talked for at least an hour or two. I mean, so I remember the sun coming up, and it was just a really cool moment between me and my dad, just talking about life, and he was helping me understand a lot. He's like, that was the Holy Spirit. I'm like, okay, that helps a little bit, but still crazy. But it was just a neat moment between him, and I just, you know, I remember driving home and telling my mom, he's like, he's okay, you know, and just surreal, and I didn't know what life was going to look like or what I was getting into, but I knew life was going to be different, and I knew I was going to follow God from that day, and I have. That's my life now. It feels weird. It feels like it just happened, and sometimes it feels like it didn't happen, you know, like it was just like a movie or something. I don't know, but I never expected it. I really didn't. I didn't know whether to share this part of it or not. I actually asked Aaron about this. Again, weird. But he said it's cool. So this is the song. If you remember when I was saying, you know, when I was feeling that whatever, electricity, tingling, whatever you want to call it, there was a song that was playing on my radio or on my CD player. It was freaking me out because in that it was just a mixed CD. The song that was playing was at the end of the song, and it was just a song that I liked. And at the end, there's a very heavy guitar that kind of plays, and there's no lyrics anymore, and it's just really heavy and like an ominous sound to it. And I just remember that playing, and I never knew the lyrics. It was, you know, a lot of those songs, you just like how they sound. You don't look at the lyrics. And this one is by a band called Tool. Have any of you guys ever heard of that band? And all right. Now we're talking. I'm not endorsing the band. This song is called Parabola. I don't know, it just came out around that time, but I looked at the lyrics and I honestly had never saw the lyrics before. This is just a few of the lyrics from the song. So, I mean, take it for whatever it's worth. But to me, it spoke to me. You know, especially there's a line that says, recognize this as a holy gift. I mean, not a lot of songs say that. So, I mean, I don't know. To me, it says that maybe God spoke through this song to me. Maybe he didn't. Maybe I just made it up. From that, I just want to say that God can speak through, obviously he speaks through the Bible. He speaks through people. He can speak through movies, books, music. I mean, doesn't just speak through Toby Mac. He can speak through, I wasn't listening to that. I was listening to Tool. Sorry, you know. He got to me. And I have to say, like, if you don't have a relationship with him, he will, if you look for him, if you seek him honestly, he will find you. I don't know what it's going to look like. It's not going to look like me. Your story is not going to look like her story. He will find you. I promise you that. If you know someone who's looking, keep praying for them. That's like the most important thing I can tell you. My sister, after I became a Christian, my sister really helped me through my first couple years. And she would tell me how she would just break down and just cry and just pray for me all the time. She was off at school. And she would just pray for me because she knew I was struggling, and she always was there for me. And I know my parents are praying for me. And honestly, I don't know if I'm here today if they don't do that. I mean, God's obviously in control of everything, but I believe there's stuff that doesn't get done because we don't pray for it. I think prayer is that big a deal. So you have to just don't get discouraged. Plant seeds. Don't feel like you gotta. If you get in a spiritual conversation with somebody, don't feel like you have to argue with them and get them to believe right then. It's like, just trust that God is working. You don't know what you say or what you do that will affect them down the road. So I'm going to close with that. If you guys got any questions for me or want to talk about anything, or I know this, like I said, this is kind of a weird, different story. I don't know how it fits theologically with what you believe, but it's just my story. So I want to thank you guys for having me tonight. It's been an honor to have you guys listen to me, and just thank you very much for your time.